Yo, Brokey, what's happening?
Hey, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Good.
Let's
get into this thing and kind of get started. One of the things I wanted to do at the top of this was kind of deal with a couple of house cleaning items. We had some listeners that called in or wrote messages and things to me and kind of gave me some feedback on the first, or I guess the episode zero that we did. So I'm going to cover that a little bit. First, though, let's give some credit. The music that you heard at the very beginning of the podcast, that music, it comes from Black Agnes. The song is called 406. And I found it on freemusicarchive.org, which is supposed to be, you know, Creative Commons, free to use. But if it's not, and somebody knows the Black Agnes, their Facebook page is facebook.com/BlackAgnes666. If you guys know them and they don't want us to use it, just let me know and I'll take it off of the podcast there. But hopefully they don't mind and they get some shout outs for this. Some other things I wanted to kind of quickly cover. We are now available on multiple podcast platforms. Right now we're available on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, and Overcast. And we're in the works for several more. Also, I guess we're technically on Anchor.fm as well, which isn't a widely known podcast platform, but they do a lot of podcast distribution, and that's actually probably the first sponsor that you hear at the beginning of episode as well. You'll hear me talk about Anchor FM and how good they've been so far with regards to getting the podcast off the ground and getting it distributed. As far as notes that people sent in, we did get several of them. My wife, Jill, she sent me one and said that I needed to pump my dad's voice up a little louder. It wasn't quite on the same level as mine, so I messed with that a little bit, so we're going to try to do that. She did think that mine sounded fine, though. Sounded really clear. A buddy of mine, Sam, from subreddit Fake Baseball out of New York, he said that we should really talk about the crazy way we came up with the teams we like, which we're going to try to touch on. Probably not going to get to it today because there's a lot of really good news stories, but also kind of commented on the unevenness of the sound, so we're going to try to fix that. Corey, my buddy from Colorado, he said the volume, again, needs to be higher for the actual podcast because the ad was super loud, and asked if I could talk slower, but then I got other feedback from Ben from Seattle, who said he actually likes the pace of the talking. So I'm just going to talk the way that I talk because I can't really think about slowing down and not talking normal while I'm going through the podcast. Some things that we kind of touched on the last podcast, and I didn't really get to go into it because one, we ran out of time, and two, I totally forgot about it. But Dad, you had asked me about the hunting trip that I went on, and I wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit and tell you how that went. So here in Alabama, we have a program that that they put on. It's part of the whole Outdoor Alabama and part of the wildlife managed association type things that they have here. And what it's called is an adult mentored hunting program. And the intent is to get first time hunters out into the woods hunting, specifically hunters who have never been hunting before. And I fall into that category. I've never been hunting, never did anything. And this particular one was a squirrel hunt, which turned out to be pretty fun, actually. It really ended up turning into walking around and hiking in the woods with a gun. So we went out. They took us to a range. We practiced with some 22 long rifles, some scoped rifles, and then we also did some skeet shooting, which I've never done before. Have you ever done skeet shooting, Dad?
Yes, I have.
Are you any good at it?
I've done duck hunting, done deer hunting, and squirrel hunting. And unfortunately, the only thing pretty much that I've killed was probably one skeet out of 30.
Yeah, I did pretty good. I got the first one that they shot out. They shot, I got three out of probably 15 that they fired out. But it was really fun. I enjoyed it. After we got done with the range, we went out into the woods, shook a couple of squirrel nests, but no, there were no squirrels, nothing to shoot at. So we ended up doing some target practice on pine cones or whatever, but it ended up being a good time. I met a couple of really cool people. The mentor that I had was really awesome. His one of his grandson is like a five-star recruit going into Alabama Crimson Tide, so that was kind of cool to talk to him about that and see how all that played out. The other thing, so this weekend was jam-packed for me. Oh my goodness, we had so much going on. I had got a whole new desk set up, and I was trying to get my audio-visual stuff set up for this podcast. And we also went to a couple of different professional sports games while we were here. So we obviously here in Birmingham, we have the Birmingham Iron. And a buddy of mine got some tickets from a friend of his, and they couldn't go. And so they invited us to go, and so we went with him and his family. And we had a really good time. We kind of sat wherever we wanted. Legion Field, really cool stadium. It has a lot of history. And the outside is a little decrepit. It needs a coat of paint. It looks like it's kind of run down. But once you actually get in and you sit down in the bleacher seating and everything, it looks pretty good. I mean, I was rather impressed with the stadium. It was super loud. Great atmosphere to watch football games. And then the other thing that I did this weekend, we went to the Birmingham Legion, which is a soccer team here. It's a new professional soccer league that had their inaugural game, first home season game over at BBVA Compass Field. And that was a great time, too. They actually packed it out. The stadium seats 5,000, and they were able to put in about 5,800 people, standing room only and stuff. So it was a good time. Really, really great for everybody that was involved there. And what did you guys do?
And let me just add real quick that it was pretty ironic that I was texting you that I was actually watching the game on TV, and you were like, I'm at the game.
Yeah, look for me. I'm in the stands.
Yeah, at the 10 yard line.
Yeah, exactly. So
that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. We had a good time.
I think last week when I was when we first started our first podcast, that I was saying that, you know, I don't get a whole lot of coverage on that league, and just so ironic that the following week, just this past, I think Saturday or Sunday or whatever, that I was watching the game, and then I texted you that I'm watching the Birmingham game, and you're like, "Well, we're here."
Yeah,
and that was pretty funny. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was a jam packed weekend though for us over here in the Warner household. So, how was it? What were you guys doing this weekend?
It was nice. Saturday didn't do a whole lot. Had to work on Saturday, and then Sunday, me and the wife went out to Yorktown Beach over here in Virginia, and it's a sort of like a traditional either Saturday or Sunday, depending on what the weather's like on that day, that we go out there and just take about an hour walk and enjoy just the view and the beach. We love the beach and everything, but usually her and I just go out there together, just us two. And then this week we decided to go ahead and invite the grandkids. So the grandkids came with us. They were running around like there was no tomorrow, and enjoyed the day. And you know, it just made our day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was pretty nice.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like we all had a pretty pretty jam-packed weekend then. Pretty fun. So, all right. So with that behind us, there's no way we can avoid this, right? New York Giants send OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr., to Cleveland Browns for a first round, 17th overall pick in the upcoming draft, a third round, 95th overall pick, and the safety, Jabril Peppers, who's coming off his sophomore year where he made some progress at the position, but still isn't an every down caliber player at this point. I'm going to let you kind of start with it and talk about how you feel about the trade, and then I'll follow up with some of the stuff that I've got.
Pretty much, I think Odell was destined to move somewhere else. Where it was going to be, there was no telling until it happened. Just like the Antonio Brown, he was destined to leave Pittsburgh. Le'Veon Bell, he was destined to leave Pittsburgh. But you know, sometimes it's why do they want to leave? You know, Antonio Brown had a great team in Pittsburgh. With the teammates that were surrounding him, starting with the quarterback, the line, front line that protects the quarterback and him and Le'Veon Bell. And then all of a sudden, if they're not getting the ball during certain games during the season, it's all of a sudden, you know, if they get two to three touches during one game, they start complaining. You know, they start their tantrums on the sidelines. And that was seen on TV. And, you know, with the fan reactions, it's like, what is he doing just because he didn't get some of these touches? And then all of a sudden, just because he didn't get those touches in a couple of these games, it's all of a sudden, it's I want to leave.
Are you talking OBJ or are you talking Mr. Big Chest AB?
You know, we've seen it with OBJ. We've seen Antonio Brown. We've seen it, you know, why Le'Veon left. I really don't know. I don't know if he didn't get enough touches, but I didn't hear him really or see him crying a whole lot through the media and everything. But that with those two, that's what happened with them being moved to other teams. Because, you know, with Antonio Brown, on some of his interviews, he's like, you know, wherever I go, it's going to be my way. Well, you know what? Pittsburgh said, okay, you are going your way. And we'll see what he does in we'll see what he does where he's going. Because, you know, just because Antonio Brown's going to the Oakland Raiders with Carr at the quarterback and everything, that doesn't mean that they're going to be a Super Bowl contender, in my opinion. Yeah, are they going to be in the playoffs? They'll probably make it to the wild card. Are they going to win the division? I doubt it, to be honest with you. But, you know, the teammates are going to have to accept him. That's the bottom line. The coach is going to have to coach him. And if the players aren't going to accept him and the coaches aren't going to be able to coach him, then it's just not going to work out.
Right. And I think you'll see that as well with OBJ. That's like one of the things too. So as a Giants fan, this is definitely not the general public's opinion, but I'm not happy with the trade as far as what they received, but I'm kind of happy to see Odell leaving the team. And the reason why I say that is because when they signed him to the contract,
I was talking about Antonio Brown going to Oakland.
Yeah. So, but yes, I agree. I think him going to Oakland is going to be a good thing for Antonio Brown. I think that his personality will shine there. It's kind of a thing for the Raiders to be kind of that bolsterous kind of team. Their fan base is very similar with that. I don't know that I really like what they got in return for him, right? They got a third rounder and a fifth rounder, I believe.
A third and fifth. Mm-hmm. Correct.
And, you know, you look at that and some of the best ever drafted third rounders. It's not a bad fraternity to be in. Joe Montana, Terrell Owens, Jason Taylor, Frank Gore, Jamal Charles, they're all previous third round picks. Fifth round, it gets a little bit smaller as far as the people that I thought were great at that, great picks at that. You have Michael Turner, Herschel Walker. But yeah, I think overall it's going to be with Antonio Brown specifically, it's going to be whether or not the Raiders can actually deal with his big personality. And I think it's, as again, bringing it back to Odell Beckham,
yeah,
I think it's similar, right? As a Giants fan, when they signed him to that 5-year contract last offseason, I was a little unhappy about it considering the current trajectory of the team, right?
A big whopping $95 million.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't necessarily the value of the contract or anything like that. It was more that they were locking him in for 5 years, right? And yes, he is a phenomenal player, generational player. He is the, like, if you're going to have a comparison from other sports, he's similar to Manny Machado and my other favorite team, the Orioles, getting rid of him and letting him kind of go his way. But I think that, you know, this season, that what's going to kind of develop out of this, right? The Giants have a high draft pick. They have the 6th and the 17th in the first round now. I think what they need to do is kind of realign, right? You're not going to build around a wide receiver like Odell Jr., Beckham Jr. And I don't think that they're drafting high enough to find the next franchise quarterback this season. I think that this season what they should do is focus on the defense and kind of bolster up the defense and use their picks early on to do that. Skip drafting a quarterback this season. You've already decided you're going to hang with Eli Manning for another year, I believe, is what they signed a contract for with him. So stick with that. Hang in there with that. And then next year, Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama is going to be available. He's pretty much a lock for the Heisman Trophy this year, unless something crazy happens, specifically if he's able to stay healthy. He still has all of his weapons on offense, both from the running backs being able to allow him to set up the pass game, and then great weapons on the other side to actually catch the passes that he's doing. So I think that you kind of take the young guys on defense, get them some snaps and a little bit of experience and everything, and then carry on. And then what the best case scenario is, once you do that, and you,
what I think is gonna is gonna settle Odell Beckham Jr. down going to Cleveland is that, you know, sort of like a family affair type thing with he's gonna be teaming up with Jarvis Landry.
Yep,
where they were teammates out at LSU.
Correct.
And, you know, when you're in college, you know, and you're young kids and everything, you tend to bond together and everything. So there was a couple of interviews where I seen OBJ where he was talking about, wherever you go, Jarvis, you know, sooner or later we're going to be together. And lo and behold, here we are, 2019.
Yeah, they've been jawing to get each other.
Yeah, so I think you're going to see Odell settle down. He's more mature than he was, you know, a year or two in maturity goes a long ways on growing up. So I think he's going to come around, and hopefully with Jarvis being his teammate, that they're gonna hook up with Baker Mayfield and make the Cleveland fans finally happy.
Yeah, I don't know. That to me is the big kind of question mark, right? You've got Baker Mayfield, big personality. You got Jarvis, big personality. Now you got Odell Beckham Jr., huge personality. Unless Kitchens can pull it off and be, you know, the
right,
the kind of guy who comes in and makes sure that they can tone all of that stuff down and play as a team, it could be an absolute catastrophe. And that's kind of the Browns doing Brown things, being realistic, right?
Sure.
So
absolutely.
I don't know. It's one of those things that's it's going to be interesting to see for sure going into this season. More trade news, right? Denver sent Case Keenum and a 2020 seventh round pick to the Redskins. I kind of chose this one a little bit because you're a little bit tied to the Redskins. I know that Ella likes the Redskins, and Casey likes the Redskins, so you probably hear a lot out of them with regards to that. And I just kind of wanted to get your opinion on it. They got the sixth rounder and the seventh rounder, and then reportedly Denver is in on Joe Flacco. They haven't really announced that yet. I believe maybe they did today, but I didn't see the news come across.
Yeah. Last year with the Redskins, they had high hopes with Smith coming in to boost their offense. And when he came in, it just wasn't panning out, to be honest with you. And then Colt McCoy, of course, he's a proven, in my opinion, a backup. And a pretty proven backup quarterback that's pretty good insurance on the sidelines when you're starting quarterbacks playing. But with Case Keenum coming in to back up Colt McCoy, probably not going to be coming up this year. They're pretty much going to be either where they were or even worse than they were last year, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would agree. Kind of moving on a little bit, I know you wanted to touch on Le'Veon Bell. I believe he is now going from Pittsburgh to the New York Jets, correct?
Yes, he is. And, you know, once again, you know, is he going to push the New York Jets up the division standings? Probably not. It's one of those things where, you know, he's great at what he does in his position, but, you know, when you have.
But yeah, okay. So we'll quickly touch on that. Le'Veon Bell going from Pittsburgh to the Jets. A lot of big NFL news going on today and over the entire week, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot more coming up in the coming weeks as well, since we're just getting into the start of free agency and everything. Some cool stories with regard in the MLB. Not a lot going on. Obviously, it's spring training, but there was a lot of really neat stories that came out with some things that they were trying to test in the Atlantic, the Independent Atlantic League. The first one is the Bryce Harper trade. I know we touched on it a little bit last week, but I thought it was really cool, some of the tax implication stuff. I saw there was a...
I thought that was pretty interesting myself, yes.
LA Times put out a an article talking about the tax implications that the teams in San Francisco would have had to overcome in order to meet the same demands, at least from a salary standpoint, that Philly was able to do. And so to put some of this into context, California's personal income tax is at 13.3%. Kind of placing that perspective from things that I know and some of the things you know, Alabama's personal income tax at the highest bracket is 4%. Virginia, where you're at, is 5.75%. And Philly, where Bryce ended up ultimately going, was 3.07% across the board. Doesn't matter what tax bracket you're in. So, in order for the LA or for the California teams, Los Angeles Dodgers, San Diego Padres, and the San Francisco Giants to have overcome the same pay that Bryce got at Philly, they would have had to come up with $368 million. Over a 13-year period in order to bridge the gap with taxes that he was going to be experiencing by going to those locations.
But, you know, I understand Bryce Harper wanting to make more money by the tax implications. But, you know, if he wanted to make even more money, then why didn't he go to a team that's over in the Miami, Florida area?
So why would he go to one of the Miami teams, though? Do they have a lower personal income tax?
That is correct.
Lower than 3%?
Do not have any personal property tax or personal taxes.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a part of it. But, I mean, if you're looking at teams, so you have to take, it's not all money, right? There's a little bit of it that's money, and there's a little bit of it that's whether or not they're going to be a winning team or not, right? So Philly has an opportunity to be a winning team, and it's at 3%, whereas Miami Marlins are not on a trajectory to be a winning team anytime soon. So going there just to be able to save 1% or 2% or 3% on personal income tax, if that's the case, it's extremely negligible. Now, the difference between going to Philly, it's a huge difference. That's 10% difference in taxes that he's going to have to be paying in order to maintain at Philly.
It's a bigger market.
And it's a bigger market for sure. The other story in the MLB that I thought was kind of neat, discussing some of the implications of some of these large players. I know we touched on a little bit last week and kind of talking about how big of an impact, specifically with Bryce Harper and how many jerseys he was able to sell, how many tickets that he sold. Recently, an article came out from ESPN.com that was saying that Machado was responsible for $3 million worth of additional ticket revenue in the 2 weeks since the deal was inked over in San Diego. So I thought that was a pretty big one, too, to kind of touch on a little bit. And then the other story in the MLB was that they announced that they are going to experiment with some rule modification in the Independent Atlantic League. And some of these had some pretty big implications, right? Like they had the strike ball assist utilizing some robotic ump stuff that they're testing out, banning the shift, no mound visits except for pitching changes, the fact that pitchers need to face a minimum of 3 batters, increasing the size of the bags from 15 to 18 inches, Time between innings reduced from 2 minutes and 5 seconds to 1 minute, 45 seconds. And then one of what I think is probably the biggest one here, if not, it's not going to be the most controversial, it might be, but it is definitely the biggest one here. Changing the distance from the pitching rubber to home plate and extending that 24 inches. So it's been 60 feet, 6 inches since 1893. That's over 126 years. And they're going to push it out 24 inches. So I didn't know if you had any of these specifically you wanted to touch on. I know I've got a couple of them that I want to go over and kind of discuss what I think the implications are going to be. But I wanted to kind of let you hit it first.
Well, my main concern is robot umps, strike ball assist. Come on. I mean, that's just like saying for every sport that goes on, to let's get robots. What are you going to do in the NBA? You're going to have a robot running up and down the court like the NBA referees do? How are you going to do that in hockey? Okay, sooner or later, if they're going to implement one thing in baseball with robot umps, it's going to continue on with other sports. Well, you're not going to have a robot skating. Come on.
No, but it's not.
Where's that going to go?
It's what, not going mean, to be. It's what, not robot umps.
And you're...
It's so what they're doing is there's a particular technology in place in all of the MLB stadiums, and it's called StatCast. And basically what they're able to do is utilizing various types of technology with being able to kind of like it utilizes similar things like GPS and being able to see where the ball is and things of that nature. What they're able to do is say where the trajectory of the ball is, where it crossed the plate, how high it passed the plate, and everything like that, and kind of help the umpires make some of these tough calls. Now, if you want to see some of the most egregious calls in Major League Baseball, go look up Angel Hernandez bad strike calls. Some of the times when he's called strike threes, and they're really, really important high leverage strikes, they've been ridiculous. I think it would be nice to have the ability for managers to give maybe 10 times a game where they're able to, similar to NFL, throw out like a red flag and get a check on whether or not it was a ball or a strike, right? You get 10 of them. The reason why I say 10 is because it can be very quick. It doesn't have to take a lot of time. You've seen how quickly, if you've ever watched an MLB broadcast, how quickly they're able to identify the location of the pitch
on the screen. Let me interrupt you real quick on that, because if I'm not mistaken, MLB, balls and strikes aren't allowed to be argued.
They're not. Currently, they're not.
Regardless,
but this would allow that.
And that's probably the most ejections of coaches that get ejected is probably called strikes and balls.
Exactly.
So
I mean, it doesn't change it. It doesn't change whether or not the pitch was called a ball or a strike. But the whole purpose of all these things is to increase or decrease the pace, or well, rather increase the pace of play, right? Speed up the game. It's they want to get the games down to somewhere around 2 to 2.5 hours per game, and so they're trying to figure out ways that they can implement changes.
The pace of the game, in my opinion, is walking to the pitcher on with the catchers and the rest of the infield on talking to the pitchers, or you know. That's where most of the time is taken, not balls and strike calls.
Yeah, definitely. No, for sure. And I mean, that's what the whole no mound visits, except for pitching changes, and pitchers have to face a minimum of 3 batters to reach the end of the inning, because there's a lot of time wasted in, you know, pitcher when they go out, they have the loogie, the left-handed one out guy who comes in and pitches to a left-handed batter, tries to get him out, and then they have another pitching switch, and now you've got another 5 to 10 minutes while they come out. They switch out, they get their 8 pitches or however many it is, and then they start the next one. And so they're trying to speed it up with that. There was a great article by a website called 538.com. They do a lot of statistical analysis, and they were discussing instead of utilizing the 3 batter rule, to instead limit the number of pitchers that a team is allowed to have on the roster. So right now they have 12 to 13, depending on the team, and kind of situationally they'll put 12 or 13 pitchers on their 25-man. And by reducing it and only allowing them to have 10, you really restrict the manager's ability to make changes. There's people who would agree with that, not agree with that, would like it, not like it. I kind of like it. I think it would definitely help with some of the decisions that are made during the game and speed some things up. But everybody's going to be a little bit different on that.
Yeah.
The other one on here that I didn't the other one I didn't particularly like on here was banning the shift. I don't think that the shift is, it really has that much of an impact on the game to ban it necessarily. You know, it's a defensive maneuver that allows you to take advantage of the fact
it
that
works.
Pitchers are pulling. Right. Well, there have been studies done that say it is, if it does work, it's extremely marginal that it works. And then it really, to me, it forces batters to learn how to bunt. If they want to do a hard shift on you to the right field and you bunt over to the third baseline and you can get on base that way, that's definitely a counter tactic to this. And this, you know, bunting is a fundamental piece of baseball.
Yeah.
You should know how to bunt. And I think that, and I'm not saying it's easy.
And it doesn't necessarily cater to the bunting. It caters to the batter's percentage of where he hits towards the infield and pretty much a little bit of the outfield, not so much the outfield, but if you have a batter that is hitting 70 to 75% toward the third and second base, they're going to shift toward that way. And, you know, I've seen some of these batters during these games that where they do the shift. Oh my gosh. It's like, that's where he's hitting it. Why wouldn't he try to hit it the other way? Lo and behold, he hits it toward that 70, 75% hole there that, guess what? The shift worked.
Yeah, but I mean, that goes kind of to the whole point of, if you get into the batter's box and there's a pitcher there throwing at you 90, 91, 92 miles per hour, it's a little difficult to just angle your pitch where you want to hit it. That's why I was saying that it kind of makes it to the point of where a batter should learn to be much better at bunting, because if they shift all of their infield over to the left to cover that 75% and you're able to lay the bunt down the first base line and run it out before the pitcher's able to get up there and the first baseman's able to run over to the bag, with all the different things that are kind of exchanging and going on there, you're increasing your ability to get on base. And so that's why I think that's why I like it. I think it will start to adjust the way that batters kind of look at every plate appearance, so a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know what? The first baseman ought to be able to shift all the way to third base if he wanted to.
Yeah,
second baseman ought to be able to shift all the way to home plate if he wanted to. So banning the shift just – it doesn't make no sense to make the players – have to play where they have to play. You have to play first, that's where you're going to stay. You have to play third base, that's where you have to stay. If outfield, in my opinion, wants to come in and play shallow toward first base because they know that that's where he's going to hit, then that's where he ought to be able to shift. Why would the league change that? That's just like saying, okay, if you're playing a guard in basketball, you're not allowed to play a center position. I mean, where's that come into?
Yeah.
Where's that come into play?
Yeah, I have to agree. It definitely takes away a lot of the defensive ability of the manager. I don't particularly like banning it. I want to continue to see the shift in baseball. And I don't think it'll last very long, banning the shift. Over there,
well, I think it's ridiculous.
Some of the other things that we're seeing, it's going to be a huge topic in 2019. I'm confident of that. You're going to see teams going to this opener, which you saw the Tampa Bay Rays employ, because they didn't have a very good starting pitching roster. They had four legitimate starters, and then they had a couple of guys who could be a fifth starter, but they were probably better facing the middle to the end of the lineup multiple times. So are you well-versed at all in the opener situation or how that's going to be utilized?
No, I'm not.
So I'll talk a little bit about it. Basically, what the premise is you have a really, really good relief pitcher who comes in and pitches between 1 and 1.2 innings. So the purpose is for them to try and get through the first three batters, which are technically or typically on a major league lineup, are going to be your best three batters, your 1, 2, 3. It's going to be a really good contact on base guy with speed at the number one. Number two is going to be a good contact, hopefully average guy, being able to move the runner over. And number three, most teams will put in some power so they can try to either get extra base hits and move the guy home, or they're going to try to to get that home run. And then you got number four, who's your cleanup, he's either going to try to hit a pop fly sacrifice or try to hit a home run. So, your top three guys going into the fourth and fifth batters are kind of that's the meat of your lineup. And so what the opener tries to do is it tries to exploit that by coming in and using a reliever who's going to come in and throw high, heavy heat, 98 to 100 miles per hour. He's not going to let up. He's going to give it everything he's got on every pitch and try to get through that first inning or 1.2 innings. Once you get past that and you get into the third out, they change pitchers, bring in the quote-unquote normal starter for the situation, and then your starter tries to go in and do, between 6 and 7 innings, and then you can hand the ball off to either a setup guy, depending on what the situation is, if it's a close game, or hand it off to the closer if you happen to be able to get into the ninth inning. And so what the thought process is a little bit is that this will be able to allow teams to actually get their starters to play more innings than they're currently playing. So right now you have a lot of starters who come in, and if they get 5.2 innings and then switch out because maybe they start getting shelled or something like that, you're not getting as much out of them as you could if you employed this opener position. I love the opener. I think it's fantastic. I'm ready to see it. I'm hoping every team in baseball employs it. I don't think it's great for pitchers such as Kershaw, right? You don't want to Kershaw is a stud. He's going to come in. He's able to put in the, 7, 8, 9 innings that you may need him. And there are times when the opener isn't a good time to use, but I think that there are a lot of situations where you have ball clubs that don't necessarily have a fantastic fifth starter that can take advantage of this. And the Tampa Bay Rays were a good example of that last year. Now, granted, they weren't good enough to make the playoffs or anything like that, but you can see how that particular strategy either would change the opposing team's manager's lineup strategy or would impact how they're going to just kind of go about the game in general. So I think it's going to be a pretty neat development in Major League Baseball. With that said, that's kind of our MLB topics. We did want to touch a little bit on some basketball topics. These are ones that, Dad, you're going to have to take the lead on. I don't know a lot about it. For instance, I did read up a little bit on Russell Westbrook fiasco with the Utah fans. From what I understand, the Utah fan kind of he made some racial comments or made some comments toward Russell Westbrook and ended up getting banned from the stadium for life, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, actually, I seen the video on TV and everything. And, what happened was that he was standing up and one of the fans was just shouting some probably bad obscenities, and he was talking about, I guess, his family and his wife and everything. And Russell Westbrook is not the one to allow something like that to happen.
Yeah, rightly so.
I'm going to tell you that right now. But you know what? The fan is banned from the Vivint Smart Home Arena for lifetime.
Right.
He is not allowed in there anymore. And the unfortunate thing is that Russell Westbrook, confronted the situation, and which is rightfully so. So, but he was fined $25,000 by the NBA. And is he supposed to just stand there and listen to that? No, in my opinion, he's not. And I don't blame Russell Westbrook to just listen to that kind of stuff from a fan. The fans are supposed to come in there. They can talk their smack, but not to the point to where they're talking about their family or whatever. Supposedly that's what happened, you know, talking about family and everything like that. But it was another situation with the New York Knicks, James Dolan, who banned another fan from life for life. And as James Dolan was walking out of the stadium, he heard a fan say, "Sell the team."
Mm-hmm.
And James Dolan confronted that fan, put his hand up to say, "Come here for a minute.
Right.
What did you say?" And he repeated it. And James Dolan says, "You know what? Do you want to come and watch the Knicks anymore? Guess what? You're not going to watch the Knicks anymore. You're not going to watch any more concerts anymore at Madison Square Garden." And how are these? How's the owner going to ban an individual just for saying sell the team? You know, I don't know if the NBA is going to take any action toward that. Are they going to allow the owner? Well, he probably has the authority to ban that fan.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's probably something that's on the back of the ticket in the small print that says something about that. You know, whether it's the same like when you're at a baseball game or you're at some other stadium and you jump on the field or some, you know, you do something crazy like that. I'm sure there's something that's in the small print. My thing with what Russell Westbrook, I mean, I don't blame the guy.
To say sell the team.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, what are you going to do if the guy says sell the team? To me, that's minor. It just seems like somebody who's flexing their muscle that has the ability. It's their arena. They can make those kind of calls. Who knows if they even really, you know, exercise that. I bet that guy could probably go and buy a ticket and no one's going to say anything. Or he could probably get his wife or, you know, girlfriend or whatever to go buy tickets. And they're not checking IDs at the front of the thing. They scan your ticket and you go in. If they see your face or something, maybe. But, I mean, ultimately, I think it's kind of a null point. The Russell Westbrook thing.
Go ahead and wear some sunglasses.
Russell Westbrook, I don't blame him, you know, but I have a, you know, somewhat thing with, and again, I don't know what was said. If it was racially charged or something like that, I mean, he's probably lucky he didn't get punched in the face. I think maybe a better way to handle it, if you're not caught up in all the emotions, is get a staff member and say, "Hey, that guy's, you know, saying stuff. We need to get him out of here." And handle it that way and let kind of the authorities handle it and just kind of go about your game.
Russell Westbrook's been known to have a short fuse.
Right, exactly. You know? And so, I mean, those kind of things happen.
And you have these games every single night with all of these other players and they don't confront the fans. You know, he's always the one coming on, you know, the ESPNs and everything the next morning showing Russell Westbrook being confrontational with these fans, and he just needs to just concentrate on the game, ignore what the fans are saying. Yeah, they are saying that, but you know what? All these players listen to that. Kevin Durant, you know, LeBron James, you know, they hear that day in and day out.
Yeah, well,
and do you see them, confronting all these fans during these situations? No, you don't.
No, but I do think it's pretty interesting you bring up LeBron James, because that leads us into the next topic here with the Lakers, and they're just absolute meltdown right now. And whether or not they're going to limit his play time anymore.
Thanks there.
Yeah, you
I
know,
appreciate that.
Well, I mean, it is. They were supposed to be really, really good this season. They brought in LeBron James, and that he was supposed to be like the big piece. That was supposed to be the missing puzzle piece for the Los Angeles Lakers. And they're just not clicking as a team. So I want to get your opinion on it. I know you follow basketball a lot better than I do. And not only that, but the Lakers are your team. So I kind of wanted to see what your thoughts were and how you thought that they were going to kind of handle the situation.
Yeah, pretty much the Lakers, you know, coming in this season, didn't have too high expectations. Probably not even make the playoffs. Once they got LeBron James, playoff implications, yeah, they should have made the playoffs this year. Are they gonna? No.
No.
but they've had, you know, some injury situations with LeBron and with Ball going down too. LeBron missed like 18 games. And
yeah, which is huge.
That's where it pretty much, yeah, that's pretty much where it was a downfall for the Lakers. But my main concern is, you know, with the organization wanting to just shut him down or limit his play for the season.
Why not? I
mean,
LeBron, you're not
James. You know? LeBron James, in my opinion, is not the type of player that's going to want to be limited in playing time or shut him down for the season, regardless of whether they're going to make the playoffs or not. So with that said, he's going to show with these younger players that he's playing with, this is who I am, and this is where, you know, I signed a, you know, I don't know how many years, I think three to five year contract with y'all to play with, and I'm not going to quit. Give our team 2 to 3 years, and we're going to be where I want us to be, and I'll show you the way of what the Laker organization is all about. And to be honest with you, mark my word, on this day, March 13th, 2019, that the Lakers in 2 years are going to be the NBA champs.
And I don't know whether or not that'll happen or not, but what I think is going to happen, and you're going to see, you know, there's going to be some discontent with LeBron James. I do think that the Lakers are probably going to limit his play time. I think it's actually, from a business standpoint, if that's the way you're looking at this, and sports is a business, I think it's a good idea for the Lakers to limit his play time.
Why are you gonna limit somebody's time when you have, I don't know, four or five months in between the seasons?
Yeah, but you have to look at it. He's already
why limit somebody's time? Back in the days, they didn't limit anybody's time.
Yeah, well, you're right, but the game has changed.
Games just because my little pinky toe was hurt.
You're right, but the game has changed, and when you get to a certain point, there are certain things that, whether or not people agree with it or not, it's in the Lakers' best interest right now to not be a winning team, to get that opportunity for the number one overall pick, to pick up Zion out of Duke, and become what will be a fantastic team. And if you, I mean, again, I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with it, but you don't want to potentially limit the LeBron James's future playing with the Lakers, right? If he gets in there and he gets hurt, and then now you've got this chronic pain, this chronic knee injury, or whatever, you know, whatever other injuries he could possibly get down the road, it's not bad for him to, at this point of his career, to take a little bit of a pump the brakes a little bit. Whether or not that's
do you not think that 4 or 5 months is not enough time to catch your breath?
I think it's plenty of time to kind of, you know, sit down and regather yourself and be able to heal up all your injuries and things like that. But I definitely can see the business side of it with regards to the Lakers deciding to limit his play time in order to increase their chances. Because I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure that the NBA has like a lottery for the first round draft pick, correct? Like, it's not like you get the worst record and then you automatically have the first round draft pick. You still have to go through a lottery.
No, it's not automatic. Yeah. Correct. So you go through bingo.
Right. And it's somewhat a gamble to be able to try and go for that. But I definitely think it would be in the Lakers' best interest to try and pull that off. So, other than that, I don't.
Your best interest, not mine.
As a fan, right?
Yes.
So, other than that,
and one more thing is, I want to just touch bases on one more thing. Luke Walton is going to make it through the rest of the season? I think he's actually going to make it through the rest of this season. Once again, they're going to make the playoffs. I think the percentage is Are they going to make the playoffs? No. But coming up next season, who are they going to pick up for another coach? Because he's pretty much going to be gone after this season. Yeah. And Ty, there's one coach out there, Tyru Lowe, I believe his name is, that used to coach LeBron James out in Cleveland. I believe is probably, in my opinion, going to be coming in and take over the reins for the Lakers.
You talking about Tyron Lue?
Cleveland. Tyron Lue, thank you.
Yeah.
And he actually used to play for the Lakers. And I think he's going to take over the reins for the Lakers next year.
Well, it would definitely be a change of scenery and probably a good thing for the Lakers as well. All right, so with that, I don't have any other topics. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on?
No, I think, you know what? We, once again, we had a full schedule here that we had to cover and was trying to just touch it real shortly on some of these subjects, but some of them we overcovered it, but I think we're good on tonight.
Well, I want to say thank you very much to everybody who happened to be listening all the way through the end of this. Dad, thank you again for joining me on the podcast. It was fun.
Thank you.
It's always
enjoyed
a blast.
Enjoyed it. Yeah. I look forward to it every Wednesday.
It's one of my favorite things during the week to look forward to.
I look forward to it. I love doing my homework, getting ready for it.
Yep. All right. So I will talk to you later.
I sure will.